to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and it's a special episode, number 271, where we will visit with Brittany Wiscombe, the director and writer, adapter. Talk to me about what you're doing with in Emma's Footsteps.
Yeah, so I both wrote it and directed it and also produced it. I'm kind of worn a lot of hats for this movie.
That seems like that would be completely exhausting to wear all those hats.
I'm getting pretty tired, I admit. I'm ready for the movie to come out in theaters and then take a little bit of a break. So,
and I say sort of wrote it because it is true to life.
Historical.
Yeah, historical, but adapted. Are there things that are completely for the story?
What we did with the film that there's so many little things that are on record that Emma said or others said about her. But like anything with history, it's spotty, right? Like it's not like you're there watching how things played out. And so with this movie, you know, there was a lot of research involved and we had another writer involved too. And, you know, working together with his notes and his research, just kind of pointing out, okay, yes, these are facts, but bridging it together with kind of the picture, the context of what she experienced. And so that's really what we did. That's where I admit there's probably some holes that we fill with that. And so, you know, we're imagining kind of what she might have actually said here and there, but there's quite a bit of actual, documented historical things in this movie.
Yeah, we're talking about Emma, and I am assuming, though I haven't asked you, we're talking about Emma Smith.
Yes.
And
Emma Hill Smith.
And I think most people who were listening, but just to clarify and make it without any sort of question, so what makes a person like yourself want to do a film like this?
I think my motivations, you know, partially lied with her kind of being, you know, people have mixed opinions about her. And so part of it was let's kind of show kind of what it might have been like for her and understand her better. And I think when we do that, just as with anybody, we get a better sense for who that person is and a better appreciation of their circumstances and their decisions. So that's part of what drew me to this project.
So give me an idea of what we're going to learn, because I think you mentioned that people have sort of mixed feelings about Emma. I think some of that is definitely led from the fact that once the prophet Joseph was martyred, I mean, she stays in Nauvoo. She doesn't follow the mainstream of the church. Her and Brigham Young didn't quite see eye to eye. Is that the kind of things that we're going to learn about, or is it sort of pre the martyrdom, or all of it, or what?
It's after the martyrdom. So we focus on that time frame, you know, after the martyrdom, and exactly what you brought up. You know, there's a lot of thoughts about how Emma and Brigham didn't get along, and so we kind of put that in a viewpoint where you can understand, okay, this is what was going on and could have influenced, you know, the situations. Also with the martyrdom itself, you know, there's a lot that she had to deal with in addition to just grieving, right? She didn't even have time for that before all these other things started to fall on her shoulders, like, sorting out property ownership and providing for her family and preserving things for her family of Joseph's memory. So a lot of things like that. You know, we also, of course, address, you know, her not going west with the saints, because I know that, understandably, that's kind of a big point where people wonder. So we kind of, you know, we show different things that happened around that time and things that could have influenced her decision and see her side of the story.
Coming into this project, what were your feelings about Emma?
You know, I had the advantage of already kind of knowing some things about her because we've worked with the Joseph Smith Jr. and Emma Hill Smith Historical Society, which is made up of descendants of Joseph and Emma. And so I already had that kind of perspective of, you know, this is a woman who went through so much and the whole family. So I was very, you know, kindly inclined to her already. But then, you know, seeing, you know, when you read different accounts and hear what different people say, you know, I think it's easy to be swayed one way or another. And that's partially why I thought it was, you know, important to do this project and show, again, things from her perspective.
You know, we're sort of talking around a bunch of things. And I want to give maybe a couple of those things that Emma experienced that either people may not know about or people may not consider until they see the film. But we'll definitely tell people to go see In Emma's Footsteps, which is, you know, the main thrust of, I'm sure, what's important to you. But tease people a little bit, because I think there's a lot that's not known.
Well, you know, just the debt that she had upon her shoulders after Joseph died.
Because the church was in debt?
There are some things from the Kirkland days where other people were able to declare bankruptcy from some dealings there, but Joseph was not able to. Mm-hmm. So as his widow, that debt now fell to her. And that was about $70,000 worth back then, which is about, close to $2 million nowadays.
Oh, geez.
And that was on her shoulders. I mean, that was something she had to. Just imagine having that to pay back, right? And I mean, to the point where parts of different holdings, different properties that they had, like the mansion house, was auctioned. Things were sold, and things like that. Where it's like on top of just normal everyday life, she had to deal with this huge burden. Mm-hmm. Probably one thing I find fascinating too that we discussed is the. How the mob were still kind of after the bodies of Joseph and Hiram Smith. Even though, they'd been killed in Carthage, they were still trying to stir up trouble and in some ways, claim bounties on them. And so that was something that Emma had to factor in is, okay, how do I protect my husband even, in death? Which is crazy. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to think about, but.
Well, and not to mention, like you had already said, the tremendous amount of heartbreak and grieving, beyond that, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's fine. He's dead. Oh, now I have to grieve about it and also keep you out of my house, out of my property, out of, taking and disparaging the bodies or whatever the thing, disrespecting the bodies, whatever they were trying to do. I mean, it almost, and I hope that this comes across, it almost seems too much, but to know her character and her power as an individual is sort of inspirational.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was something I've been thinking about lately is just, if any one of us were to go through a few of her challenges, we could probably relate and be like, okay, yeah, I could get through that. But when you look at everything that she went through, that's where it's really kind of, the kicker where you're like, wow, that's really amazing, that she could not be, she never lost that kind and charitable side of her character. And that's just something that's amazing when you factor in how much turmoil and how much strife she was up against.
Are there things that we'll see in the film that we'll be like, no way, there's no way that can be true? You don't need to reveal them, but are there things that'll be like, hey, wait a minute.
I'm trying to think. Nothing really stands out because everything that every section or piece, so to speak, mm-hmm. is based on something.
Sure.
So I can't really think of anything that's really obvious of, oh, that didn't happen or something like that. Early on we had thought about on this project of, should we go a fictional route? And that just didn't sit well with any of us. And we were thinking, no, let's go. Let's stick closer to the history and show really what it was like for her.
I raise that question just because Emma, maybe because she didn't come west, maybe because, she remarried and stayed there, or we sort of discount her because, after the martyrdom of Joseph, we just kind of go, and that's the end of her story. I asked that the previous question, is there things that will surprise us? Because I am constantly fascinated by when I just take a few minutes and read a little bit of history from the early time mm-hmm. of the church that I go, wait, what? Not that it hasn't been available the whole time. Not that, that there aren't people within the church that know it, but just things that I go, well, that is something I had no idea. And that sort of surprises.
Yeah. There definitely are those things for, I totally hear what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, so who are you to make a film like this? Tell me a little bit about you.
I've been writing films for a while now. I think this is 15 or north of 15 in terms of number of scripts I've written. Mm-hmm. And since I was writing this film, I knew the story inside and out. And so it kind of came to a point as, and we went through so many different drafts and thoughts of how to structure the story. I mean, I have so many different scripts on my hard drive that I'm just, never even saw the light of day. But that was important, I think, because I think the way we have shot the film and the way that the story has ended up, the script that we, that I finished and that we used, that's the one that really, I think, brings it all together. And with that, we're looking at the script and the project as a whole, and thinking, okay, who's going to direct this? And that's where, you know, we kind of went back and forth kind of thinking about that. And I admit, a little hesitant about it, but it made sense for me to kind of step in and go ahead and direct this film.
Have you ever done that before?
No, I hadn't. This is my first film that I've directed. And so it was a little daunting, you know, obviously, especially a film of this magnitude. But it went really well. I mean, production went very smoothly, I think, which is every person's, you know, filmmaker's dream.
Mm-hmm. Were there moments, you know, you often hear within church films, I don't want to give it that label, sorry that I just did that, but... Since I have, let's move along. There are opportunities where the spirit sort of bears witness of like what's being filmed or of the story that's being told. Were there some religious experiences that happened on set? Or spiritual experiences, maybe a better way to phrase that?
You know, I think there are moments where you can kind of, where it just seeped in some of the, what's the right way to phrase it? I guess the reality, and also where you could really sympathize and feel kind of the depth of what, you know, both Emma and also Lucy Mack Smith and Mary Fielding Smith, what they went through. Like I'm thinking about, you know, after the martyrdom, of course, and those reactions, you know, those were scenes that really just kind of, you know, grab you even on set and with the hustle and bustle of filming. I mean, in terms of spiritual experiences, I kind of viewed, you know, it's such a busy pace filming. Like there's so much to do.
Constantly.
And you think of spiritual experiences as those moments when you have peace and quiet, which doesn't always line up with filming. But, you know, like I mentioned before, it went really smoothly. And so I guess when filming was all said and done and I looked back on it, I was like, wow, that could have, you know, we've filmed many films before, right? And this could have gone wrong in so many different places. It could have been so much more bumpy of a process, and it really wasn't. And so for me, that was really a moment where I was like, wow, I really feel like I had help through this. Hmm. And so that was really neat to reflect on that after the fact. And there's also moments too where you know, some of the cast and crew would be talking and kind of just reflecting on, wow, I never knew this about Emma. You know, even people who are not familiar with the church at all, talking with one person, and they're like, so what's going on in all this? I have no idea, you know, didn't know who Joseph Smith was, you know, didn't know about the Book of Mormon or anything like that. And so I was like, whoa, okay, let me tell you a little bit. So those were neat moments too.
Talk a little bit about casting Emma. I would think that would be probably the hardest part of this.
You know, I lucked out because that was actually the easiest part.
Hmm.
I worked with Shona K. Moyer, you know, several times before. We had even filmed kind of back when this movie was in a not conceptual stage, but it was kind of a teaser stage almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of as a way to start showing a little bit about what the project could be and raising funds, we filmed for like, I think like a week, and then just filmed a few scenes. And that was actually a few years ago. And so she was cast back then. And that was before I was really actively involved in the project. And so when we came time for, you know, really completing the film, it was just natural to go back to her because all those scenes had worked so well.
Hmm.
And also in the meantime, I'd continued to work with her and knew she was just a strong actress and could really, you know, bring Emma Smith to life. And she really is, I think, quite in tune with the emotions, I think, and just brings that out, which I think is, you know, key.
And coming up in the second half of this, I'll actually be able to visit with her and ask her if it was really that easy on her end. We'll find some of the background about her and the portrayal of this whole thing. Just a couple other things about you. So I know you mentioned that you have written and worked on somewhere around 15 projects, but is filmmaking something you always wanted to do? Tell us about the early Brittany.
The early Brittany. Oh, goodness. Well, you know, I always loved writing creatively. Like even when I was, you know, 10 or 11, I read like crazy as a kid. Which I think kind of influenced that as well. So I would write, you know, little short stories or little, you know, fictional things. That always kind of been in the back of my mind. And then I went to BYU and I was studying print journalism partially because I just didn't know what I would do with an English major.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you thought, what would I do with the print journalism?
Yeah. Yeah,
because that's dying.
It was going. It was kind of going out too. Like it was definitely like, okay, print journalism. You know, that's kind of having a hard time. And that was back when I was in college. So, but you know, it's not like writing's ever going out of style. But I really didn't enjoy the having just to report fact. I enjoyed the more creative side. You know, both fiction and then also being able to shape and tell a story for screen is just so much different, right? And so. My brother Brian Bruff was working in the film industry, and he started to, you know, bring me on as a production assistant, you know, as well as you can be on the totem pole. And I gained experience there and kind of realized I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to finish my print journalism degree and then never use it. So, and that's kind of what ended up happening. I pretty much freelanced in film until a point where we, you know, had our own family company started, and we've been doing that ever since.
And I didn't know that you were Brian Bruff's sister. He's been here. He's been here in the Cultural Hall several times, and I knew that you obviously knew him because a lot of your projects are projects that I knew that he had worked on. But I did not know of the relation. We're doing genealogy here in the Cultural Hall today.
What better place, right?
There is no better place. Did you meet your husband at BYU?
I did. Yeah, we had kind of the stereotypical story of being in the same ward and met and dated and got married. And
it's interesting because
years later,
you say the stereotypical story, but I've never heard of that happening at BYU.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Maybe once or twice. And you guys have a couple of kids. And then the name of the company, it escapes me right now. It's Candlelight?
Candlelight Media Group.
That's what it is. And you guys are cranking out just amazing, amazing, great work. I know you guys had some in the LDS Film Festival, and people that work with you say nothing but just amazing praises. As I'm looking over with some of the stuff that you guys have done in the past, Singing with Angels, I know we talked with Brian. I think that's where I originally talked with Brian. That's the film about the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and you guys actually got to film with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, correct?
Yes, that was a big project. We're so happy with how that turned out. But yeah, that was a big a big story to tell, and a lot of people to involve, both with, you know, with the choir obviously, and just a lot of heart and soul and labor of love went into that, and we're really happy with how that one turned out too.
And we started off by talking about how exhausting this is. How exhausting is it really?
You know, what's unique about my role in this film as director is that you are involved really all the way along. And then, you know, Candlelight Media Group is distributing it, so I'm involved even further along than probably most directors are. I feel like I have lived and breathed this project for, you know, actively for the last year. Seriously, once June 1 comes along and it's out in theaters, I think I'm just going to relax and maybe take a little vacation or something just to catch my breath before we get into the next movie.
I was just going to say, if I know anything about you through your brother, you're not really going to relax for very long, and you'll be back on set or back in the office writing another film to come out from Candlelight Media. We're going to talk with Shona Moyer here in the second half of this. But before I let you go, I want to ask you the three questions that we ask everyone who steps here into the Cultural Hall. So let me ask those of you now. First of all, do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
I am the gospel doctrine teacher.
Ooh,
for the adults. So.
And it's Old Testament. How are you hanging in there?
I'm actually loving it. I'm amazed at what I can learn just by application to my personal life and to the lives of others in the class from the Old Testament, which honestly is like in everything now. You know, even in Emma's footsteps, I see applications of you know, the gospel everywhere. So I've really enjoyed it.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I think the Relief Society or primary pianist.
You like playing the piano and just doing that?
Yeah, well, I've played piano, you know, most of my life, and I think it would encourage me to play more and better. And then there's something very comforting about being able to hide behind the piano.
Have you ever acted in any of the films that you guys have done at Candlelight?
Yeah, just more like small little things of, hey, we need somebody to give this line. Brittany, jump in and do it. So, you know, that type of thing.
But yeah, never a leading lady or a supporting lady?
No, not yet. Who knows? But I think I'm going to be pretty busy writing for the foreseeable future anyway.
You're like, if you want to find me, I'll be back in that office doing that behind the scenes thing. Please and thank you.
Yep, exactly.
The last question that I want to ask you before we let you go is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
the favorite part of my faith. I think just the knowledge about Forever Families, I think that is everything to me. I'm fortunate to have two wonderful children. To have two children, and they are wonderful. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, being a mom has just really opened my eyes to just, that belief of Forever Families, and kind of see and learn things more and understand better how much Heavenly Father loves each of us.
You know, we'll mention this again, I'm sure, as we're talking to Shauna, but it's very important for people to see the film in its opening weekend as it comes out. Talk a little bit about why that's so important.
Well, you know, there's always so much competition, in the sense that there's so many movies coming out, and we're into the summer basically, and there's only so many screens that every theater has. And so that's why it's so important, because this film will only be in the theaters for a limited time. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, who knows? But that's why it's so important. Go see it as soon as you can, because you may miss it. It may be replaced by, you know, one of the Hollywood blockbusters. Mm-hmm. And that's just a reality, you know? And so that's why it's so important for people to go see it. Certainly the opening weekend would be fantastic. But definitely, you know, go see it as soon as you can, because with not just our movie, any movie, it is a very limited time that it will be there.
Well, and it also dictates, if I understand correctly, like, it dictates whether it may even make it to a second week. If something came out on the first weekend and no one went, like, it really could be done and gone after that first week.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, that won't be the case for In Emma's Footsteps. I'm just saying, you know, people have a large responsibility now placed upon them.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is, you know, the theaters will keep the movie as long as it makes sense to, considering what another movie might bring in terms of, you know, tickets sold. And so that's why, like you said, come see it that opening weekend. Those first, you know, week or two is so crucial, especially the opening weekend, like you mentioned, because it does show that, yes, there's a demand. And, you know, where we're competing with demand for, you know, other movies that are $200 million, it's a hard, we're up against some big challenges, but I think people will really enjoy this movie, so I hope they go see In Emma's Footsteps right away as soon as it comes out on June 1st in Megaplex theaters.
And we'll talk with the actress who played the title role of Emma coming up in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails from people all the time. Here's one. Dear Dan, I hear your talk about a lifetime service guarantee. Free? Really? Please help me avoid all your fine print and be honest about what free means. You understand that we should be very wary of a free offer? Signed, Skeptical. Hi, Skeptical. I remember 22 years ago when we started PC Laptops and our lifetime service guarantee, people thought it was too good to be true. Well, you know, after a decade, people started believing me a little bit. But you know, it's been 22 years of having the privilege to serve our friends and neighbors like you. Our lifetime service guarantee has become the most trusted warranty in the industry. You can get a brand new PC Laptops desktop computer for $799 with a lifetime warranty. Check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Here's to seeing you soon, Skeptical.
Hey, you guys, I want to talk to you about BestDJInUtah.com. Why, that's the company that I have started for doing my DJing weddings and live events. Whatever you need, I am your guy to do it. So whether you're a lifer or a convert to this podcast show, or you just happen to be listening for the first time, if you are in need of a wedding DJ or an MC for your event, or just a DJ for your business opening, go to bestdjinutah.com. Now, I know it says Utah, but guess what? If you want me to come to your event and you're not in Utah, I'll do that too. You're going to have to pay for me to be there, but I'm more than willing to do that as well. It's bestdjinutah.com. Emails there, phone numbers there. Would love to hear from you and then help you make your event that much better. Look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for supporting the Cultural Hall podcast. But it's a show. You knew that.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. 1 in 5 children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
It's time now for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and on the phone with me is Shona Moyer, who plays Emma in this film. Now, you heard Brittany refer to Shona as the only possible choice that she could have for the role of Emma. What was that like for you, finding out that you'd be playing Emma, Shona?
It was petrifying, yeah. A little bit of a shock for me, I think.
In what way?
Well, the process that it happened was unusual for me because in film in general, usually there is a time for preparation and really gathering, you know, your thoughts and a gestation period of really creating that character. Whereas when we originally started, I came down and read for the role, and I have a very good relationship with Brian and Brittany, so I trust them absolutely. So they said, we've considered you for this role. We'd like to see you read the lines and see you actually audition, and we'll let you know. And I came down and I read, and I was on my way home, and Brian called me and he said, all right, we're going to go through with this and we will see you Monday. And this was a Friday night.
Oh my gosh. And so then what's the next thought? Because at that point you are Emma Smith.
Yeah. So, and those to me are some massive shoes to be filled. So obviously I thought, well, what do I know about her? And I think that's a situation a lot of people are in, is they've, you know, they have heard other people's opinions of her, or they've heard other people's sort of, you know, preconceived ideas about her. But I didn't have any personal information that I had found myself. I didn't have really a formulated opinion about her. I just knew what I thought I knew. And so I kind of panicked and thought, I have to find out a lot about this woman. So I literally just spent the next 2 days reading everything that I could and praying a lot.
At the point of being cast, what were your feelings towards Emma? And then in the process of that weekend, how did it change?
I had always thought of Emma as an absolute just saint in my mind. I thought the things that I had heard that she put up with, and the things that I had heard that she was able to really survive through and struggle and overcome, were just, I mean, unimaginable, really, what she went through. So much loss and so much trauma that it's actually really hard for people to understand how terrifying that would be. And so I always had a lot of respect for her, but it didn't go very deep. It didn't go much further than respect for her as the wife of a prophet. The first, you know, I knew that she was the first one to have started the Relief Society, or the first president of the Relief Society. And I knew of her as a very cherishable woman. But to be honest, that was about all I knew about her. I didn't know much more than that.
So then what did you learn that weekend, then, that first weekend?
It's funny, because that first weekend, I really didn't have a lot of time to learn much. I studied as much as I could, but I was also in the process of memorizing a script and also trying to learn an accent, because I speak as an American in a New England style accent, also in oldie time American, which is a very different from the way that you or most people in America speak. And so that was something also I had to sort of get and nail down, you know, because that to me was the first and maybe most important, you know, task that I had to overcome, was just to have the certain threshold of believability from the beginning. So before anybody could relate to me as her emotionally, I had to get them to believe as me, as her, as a person, and then stop thinking, oh, we're watching an actor, and just listen to the story. So I really went in actually very unprepared. And the first 2 weeks we did filming, like I said, I prayed a lot, but I had some actually very very amazing experiences during that time.
Talk to me about them.
I actually had some very sacred moments where we were in the scene, and I thought I had prepared as much as an actor could, in the sense that I knew my lines, and I had to make some technical choices, like I said, about accent and the way that I thought she would be. But then I had to also make some emotional choices of what she would be feeling in a situation. And I went into, I remember a particular scene we were filming in a room, and it was up at the This Is the Place monument in Northern Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And the rooms up there are built, you know, as, you know, like just like they were back then. So very, very small rooms, log, you know, made out of wood, like no window, no sort of thing. And we had all of our crew kind of in this very small space. It was very hot. And I walked in and I felt a very different atmosphere once I walked onto that set. And in the scene, she was supposed to be praying for help. And I had already, like I said, made these decisions of what I thought her emotions would be like. And I felt a very strong presence come over me that, and there were emotions that were not my own. There were emotions that were different than the choices that I had made. And I really felt that, oh, I need to go with this. This is a help that I've been praying for, and this is what I need to trust in. So I really felt a lot of that in a lot of the scenes, that the emotions that I felt were not maybe choices I had made myself, but were actually help.
Do you believe it to be the spirit, or maybe even to go as far as to say Emma on the other side?
I actually think that Emma is very close to this project, and I think that she's been with me a lot. And in fact, I had another experience with her towards the end of the project, which was actually 8 years after that first feeling of an influence or of a presence, and I believe it was her. I think that she's very close to this because I think that she wants her story to be told, and I think it's been very hurtful, the misrepresentations and the confusion, I think, about her role that she played during that time.
I think one of the things that I really got from Brittany in our discussion, and certainly I've heard you echo that here, is this will be a greater understanding of Emma than perhaps we've ever had before. You mentioned going into it, you had a very, and I mean this is no sort of insult, but to use your own words, you had sort of a shallow understanding of who she was. So what did you come out, I mean, aside from these spiritual experiences, what did you come out either appreciating about her or even just learning about her and her life?
I think what I was able to appreciate and what I really tried to portray about her is that she was not only a person who was flawed, but that she was very complex and that she was beautifully human and had so much about her to be admired. Because, I mean, we really go into an investigation into who Emma was as a person, and you will see that in the film as we see these different situations or events that she's in. And as I got to know her, I really started to feel that she was one of the great historical female role models. I mean, she was this woman who was able to suffer, but then fight and actually rise above and kind of find a type of dignity and actually triumph in the end. And on quite a public stage, because people forget that everybody sort of looked at her. She was... the circumstances that she was in were just, like I said before, unimaginable, but she was actually able to kind of do it with just a lot of dignity, I feel like, and I really respect that and still have a lot of love and charity for the people around her and stay remarkably composed, you know, despite really her whole world is sort of crumbling around her.
You had the opportunity to play her in this film, and I want to give you the opportunity to make an appeal to people. Why should people see this?
Oh, because we put a lot of work into it. No, I think that that's what I was saying. Just this movie is not just for Mormons as well, but it's really for anybody who's concerned with the role of women in religion or in society. You know, I think that they will find this story interesting. And really, today, we live in a climate of entitlement, and we really need to face some hard truths. We need to have more stories about people like Emma, and we need to, that's why we look at history, really, is to look for inspiration and to look for insight into ways to live our lives. And, you know, women today can't afford to be sweet but uninformed. You know, we need people who are like Emma, who are competent and clever, but they are not afraid to ask the questions and know what they believe in before they're willing to stand up for it.
Is there anything about Emma that totally floored you, just surprised you?
Her ability to forgive, and it still absolutely floors me. I've had to put myself in her position and had to feel a lot of her emotions, and just for me as a person and an individual, she was put in circumstances and dealt with people many, many times and was able to actually forgive them and still show them kindness and love and serve them in when I don't think that many people could do that. And it literally, I am still amazed by her ability to do that. And I don't know how she did that.
So I want to break away from the film and let's find out a little bit more about you. Who are you?
Oh, I'm so interesting. I'm just... I am me. I am an actress. I came to America when I was 19 to actually attend BYU down in Provo, and I wanted to study theater. But my main focus back then was dance. I really loved the theater because I loved music and dance and all of that. And acting wasn't actually my focus at that time. And then I started to do a few projects and actually realized that that was really what brought me a lot of joy. And I actually found my most creative outlets when I was acting. So I sort of shifted a little bit and started to gear a little bit more towards film and that sort of thing. But yeah.
Are you a convert to the church from, I'm presuming, England?
Yeah. Yep, England, Great Britain, England. Okay. No, I was born in the church. My grandfather was a convert, he's from England, and my nana from Scotland met missionaries, and she was converted by missionaries who were up in Scotland. And when she met my granddad, who is a British naval officer, she introduced him to the church. And then they had 5 children who were all very active, and my mother was one of them and raised me in the church as well.
So it was sort of your pilgrimage to then come to BYU, right? Something you'd thought about your life, man, to be around this many saints and in one place and a higher education. It was that sort of thing?
No, I didn't want to go. My mom made me go.
Oh.
I had actually started dancing out in England. I was doing some music videos, and I had actually joined a dance group that we were gaining some kind of exposure and traction out there in England, and I really loved it. I loved what we were doing. And my mum and I just finished an associate's degree in performing arts out there, and I thought, oh, I might go and do some more schooling, but I'm really liking this career path I'm on. And my mum said, why? My mum loves education. That's my mum's like goal in life, is to get everybody better educated.
Mm-hmm.
She's a teacher, so you know. And so she said, well, why don't you just apply, you know, to BYU, because they have a really good theatre program. And I thought, oh, I don't know about that, but all right. So I'm just doing it really to make her happy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was working with a film out there, and they said, all right, well, we're taking all of this group to go on and make another movie. And this was the movie Troy, you know, with Brad Pitt and that. We're all going to go out and work on that. And I thought, oh, great. I get to go work on this film with, you know, out on an island with Brad Pitt. And then at that same time, my letter from BYU came through saying I'd been accepted. And I thought, oh, dear, like, what am I going to do? And I can't remember what made me choose BYU.
Yeah.
But I picked it and I went, and so it wasn't my lifelong ambition, though.
but you came here and you did it, and now are you a full-time actor?
Yes. I mean, I'm a mom as well, so I actually have 3 small children, ages 2, 4, and 6, and they keep me very busy. But that is why I actually remained in Utah after I decided to do film, and that because I wanted to be able to be in sort of an environment where I could act much as I wanted to, or act on projects that I was proud of, and still be a mum and still be able to have that life as well. So being able to live in Utah, and the film industry that's in Utah, has actually provided me that opportunity, and I don't think I could have had that in many other places.
I'm going to take a stab and guess that you met your husband at BYU.
Well, he was lurking around the outside, if that's what you mean. I was at BYU. He was not. I was more of a friends of friends of friends. Oh, no, you're not doing well here. You're not doing well, and you get it.
Listen, it's not me. You're doing well at not being the stereotypical sort of BYU and Mormon story. Was there, let me ask you this, is there or was there or is there still a perception, a thought about you being an actor and a Mormon and mom, some sort of stereotype that you feel like you have to break or lead out saying, no, you can be this?
I have had a lot of difficulty and a lot of resistance in trying to do both, to be honest. And I do say it is a rare set of circumstances to be able to do that. But it has still been a challenge. I've had a lot of opportunities that would have, had I followed, would have taken me away from my family or maybe not allowed me to have this life. So it is actually a daily choice, or, you know, I had to continue to keep making that choice. I didn't just decide, well, I'll have a family and be an actress as well. It's something that I've had to make a lot of sacrifices for, and have a good support group around me as well. I have a mother-in-law who, if I didn't have somebody like that who could help watch my children and know that they were in a loving environment, I couldn't do it either. So I think that that's a rare situation that I have as well. But I think it's an everyday choice. I've had to turn down a lot of things, and I've had to really, really decide, look, this is what my goals and my priorities are, and I couldn't let anything sort of change that.
Now, the film In Emma's Footsteps comes out on the 1st of June, and we've already made the push. You need to go see it, especially that opening weekend, so that it can continue to stay in theaters. Is there other projects that people would go, hey, look, it's Shona?
In the LDS community, yeah, I've just finished doing the Book of Mormon Video Library, where I call her Miss Sassy Pants, but others may refer to her as the wife of Layman. But I love working. We worked on those projects all last summer, and actually we still have one more unit to film this next coming month, and that has been an absolute wonderful project. But people might recognize me in there and think, oh, look, she's not so faithful as she's telling Layman to tie up Nephi, you know?
Interesting. Is that Emma telling them to? That's an interesting crossover, isn't it?
Yeah. It's been kind of fun to be able to play the two sides of faithful women and to be not so faithful on the other.
Other things that people would recognize you from?
I've worked with the Brush in a lot of projects we've had in the past. The main film that I did with them was called The Beautiful Bees. I played the lead character in that, and that is, you know, available. But also some of do I list them all or what do I do?
Yeah, brag, light it up. Let's hear about
no,
it.
No, I'm embarrassed. No,
don't be. Don't
they
be.
They might recognize me. I have people in the church in my ward actually stop me in the halls and say, oh, I just watched a movie with you in it, and I think, oh, that's really funny that they, because I don't usually tell them, but they try to like recognize me from, you know, oh, I've recognized you from that, but I don't tell many people.
So
I have also played Emma in two different projects. The Prof did a movie called 16 Stones, and I play Emma in a very small moment in there, but I also up at the LDS Church History Museum, when people go through that, they've redone all of their multimedia outlets up there, and I play Emma Smith in all of the touch screen like videos and stuff when she comes out and tells her testimony in that there as well.
Is it a pretty unique partner that you have that affords you to be able to be an actor?
Absolutely. He's very, very understanding. He used to think what I did was silly, but now he tells you do a silly job, but he's very, very understanding and very, very supportive in me and what I do. So that has also helped me a lot.
It's fun to see how that, how truly, it probably isn't the easiest thing, right? I would imagine that there are times where it's like, wait, you have to do what? And you're going to be gone doing these things for how long? But that an understanding partner and a supportive partner allows you the opportunity to do this thing that is so, so ingrained and so passionate for you. That's pretty remarkable.
It is. I actually am really blessed to have that. And it's just like you said, some of these films or projects will take me away. And Emma, we actually had to go out to Nauvoo and film for a period of time, and even with the Book of Mormon projects, we were up in Northern Oregon filming, you know, and I am very fortunate, absolutely.
What was the experience like being in Nauvoo for you?
Oh my goodness, that was wonderful. In fact, we had a descendant of Joseph and Emma on set there. Her name is Kimberly Doe. And she played an extra sort of in the film. Her son played a role in the movie, but she had the keys to all the buildings. And so in between scenes, you know, it was a very quiet period of time. And I would look and be like, it's amazing that this is the building she died in. And she said, oh, do you want to go in? And she would just take me into these buildings. And one amazing situation we had was we walked in, and her and her son actually write a lot of music and sing sort of old folky songs and old pioneer songs. And we were in the room that Emma actually died in, and I was able to look out the window. That they said she used to sit and look out this window a lot over the Mississippi and over the property that they had there. And I was looking out that window, and Kimberly and her son, who have these beautiful voices, started singing this very old pioneer song in like perfect harmony as I was standing in that room. And the spirit literally filled the whole room, and it was a really, really amazing experience for me to have there.
You've said that you have played Emma before. How was this experience different?
I think every time that I've been able to play her, it actually moved me further towards this, because as I said, I had the first casting experience, but that was many years ago. And then this film was put on hold for a long, long time. In fact, we thought it wasn't going to be made. We lost funding, we lost support. And I actually had two children during the time that we'd finished and thought it was not going to be happening. And I was getting opportunities to maybe speak about her in my ward, and I was getting times where I would ask to speak to a Relief Society group about, you know, the founder of the Relief Society. And every time that I was asked to speak on her, I sort of would learn more and discover more about her and get to know her better. But I started to also get frustrated, because I thought, you know, when you're asked to call, you're called to go and speak about somebody, you usually think, well, there's a lesson here that I'm supposed to learn. And I kept being asked to speak about her, and I thought, I was getting frustrated. In fact, I said to my husband, what is it that I am not learning? What more can I learn about this woman? What am I not getting? And he said to me, maybe it's not something that you have to learn. Maybe it's something that you have to do. And at this time, I think it had been almost 5 or 6 years since I had spoken with Brian and Brittany about that project. And I just thought, well, what can I do? What can I do? And I sat down and I actually just started writing a letter. And I wrote a letter. I titled it To Emma. And I started writing all of the experiences I had had, getting to know her, the changes I had seen in my life, trying to become actually more like her as a role model, as a woman and as a mother, and all of the experiences I had had. And then I also started saying in this letter, if there is anything that I can do to bring the story about, you know, in any capacity, whether it's just raising funds or just supporting it in any way, even if they need to recast this movie and I not be the one to play her, I will do it and I will support it in any way. And I actually sent this letter to Brian, and he wrote back to me and he said, you know, we have a script and we have a format to do it on. It would just be maybe a little more scaled back version of what we originally had, but we can do this and we can start filming in the spring. And to me, that was an absolute miracle and was really the answer to a lot of prayers that I'd had and thought, okay, then this is what needs to happen. Because I believe everything happens for a time, and I feel like maybe now is the time that this needs to come out. And yeah.
I ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall 3 questions, and so I will ask those 3 questions of you right now.
Okay.
I love it. The first question is, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is that calling?
I currently do not have a calling, but don't tell my vision, because I think I've slid under the radar.
If you could pick one for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I like this calling. I like being able to play women in the church. I love being able to tell their stories and to be able to go. I really feel like this time that I've had learning about her and being prepared has almost been like me being called on a mission. Like, I feel like I've had this preparation time, and I feel like this has been kind of a calling for me. So I'll just keep the one I've got at the moment, thanks.
Just don't tell the bishop.
Just don't tell the bishop. Well, how many people gave you that answer when you asked them questions? Don't tell my bishop.
Never before, but I hope your bishop listens to the Cultural Hall and promptly calls you in and says, now, Shona, let's talk about this interview. The last question that I ask everyone, and you can interpret this question however you would like, is what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith, I think it is to know what you believe in helps you to know who you are. And I feel like if, because I know what I believe in, that has created who I am and has actually set a map of my life and has actually set the trajectory of where the decisions that I've made in my life, of how I raise my children, of the man that I married. And my faith is what I believe in. And really that kind of made me who I am.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing all the different stories from the set and the experiences from you, from your life, and all of those things. Again, One Last Push, In Emma's Footsteps, comes out in theaters June 1st. People go check it out that first opening weekend and enjoy it, and tell friends to go see it, and do it for a family home evening, whatever you need to, get out and check it out. You mentioned the Book of Mormon Project. Is there other things coming up that people can look forward to seeing you in?
Those have been taking up a lot of my time recently, so yeah, and I'm actually still filming the Book of Mormon Project. We go into filming the end of that next month, so after that I'm unemployed, so if you want to give me a job, give me a call.
Okay, deal. That is it then. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat on the back row. We read